Hey, this is Cedric, your host of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And this episode with Chris and Frieda Bobé, the authors of the fantastic new children's book, Bitcoin for Kiddos, is brought to you by Ledin, Bitcoin Magazine, and the Bitcoin 2022 conference. Bitcoiners, you should know that Ledin offers interest-bearing savings accounts and Bitcoin-backed loans with the best rates in the entire industry, enabling users to access dollars or additional Bitcoin without needing to sell your existing holdings. That's right, Ledin is bringing financial service to Bitcoin that enable you to use your BTC as the pristine collateral that it is. Already a Ledin client? As of December 1st, they're increasing their referral bonus to $50 in USDC for the rest of the year. That means you'll now get $50 in USDC every time your unique referral link is used to open and fund a Ledin savings account. Since they wanted to make this a win-win, your referral will also receive $50 in USDC. Best of all, listeners of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast can get $50 in free USDC when you become a Ledin user and take out a Ledin loan using our link. To learn more, sign up and get earning at start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. All right, please let me tell you about the Bitcoin 2022 conference. There's going to be Bitcoin musicians, Bitcoin artists, and your favorite Bitcoiners all in an amazing environment to party and just soak it all in and get people to realize that a Bitcoin world, a world where people are doing Bitcoin things, is the world that we all want to live in. That's what Bitcoin 2022 is all about. That's what the Bitcoin conference is all about. It is going to be a celebration of Bitcoin and the Bitcoiners and this amazing movement that is going to make the world a better place. There's going to be an industry day on April 6th, 2 days of the best speakers in the space on April 7th and 8th, and lastly, the Sound Money Music Festival on April 9th. Imagine Coachella, but for Bitcoin. This is already a can't-miss event with all your favorite Bitcoiners in an amazing environment to chill, party, and learn. Prices are only going to go up, and they are going to sell out fast. So if you haven't secured your tickets for the Bitcoin conference, go and do it now at b.tc/conference and learn more about Bitcoin 2022, the amazing things that are happening in Miami, and buy your tickets. And guess what? You can use the code BITCOINMATRIX for 10% off at checkout. Go and do it today. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix with Chris and Frieda Bobé to hear all about their wonderful new book, Bitcoin for Kiddos.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Our kids are the future, and the book Bitcoin for Kiddos, which was written and illustrated by Chris and Frieda Bobé, was born out of a lack of educational material for children around this digital asset. Chris and Frieda wanted to start a fun and engaging dialogue with our kids on the subject of money and where Bitcoin fits in. The world is constantly changing around us, and the money is changing too. As everything becomes more digitized, we as parents must do our best to keep up and continue our education. We believe that Bitcoin is a monetary system that provides an even playing field and will give our children the best chance at a bright future. Chris and Frieda, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. How are you guys?
We're doing great.
Good. Great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm super excited to talk to you guys. I love the book, Bitcoin for Kiddos. It's wonderful. I've read it a few times to my kids. I love the illustrations and the rhyme schemes. So I'd love to ask you guys, where did the inspiration for this book come from?
Oh, that's kind of a loaded question.
Sure.
It was years in the making, if you will. I grew up in a family with two parents that were both entrepreneurs. They both owned their businesses for a long time. They taught my brother and I kind of the value of money and hard work at an early age. And so we were always doing things behind the scenes to help them do some extra work that they didn't want to pay other people to do for them, which included everything from stuffing envelopes to dot sealing magazines to folding trifolds that would go on TV advertisements at grocery or at stores. My mom owned a couple of accessory stores, women's accessory stores that we would have to help out with stocking and inventory and whatnot. So work was always a thing in my family from the very beginning. And I always wanted to try to find a way to kind of do less of that. And as I looked around and I saw a lot of, you know, financially savvy people, if you will, or a lot of the wealthy people out there, it seemed like the more money they make, the less work they did. And to me, that was always kind of inspiring. So I decided early on that I wanted to get my background and my degree in finance, which I did from San Jose State. But I didn't really want to get the degree in the sense of becoming a financial advisor and kind of helping other people with their finances, because I just felt that that was too big of a responsibility, if you will. And I didn't want to be responsible for anybody losing their future. But I did want to know more about money and how it all worked and the differences between money and currency and investing in assets and wealth appreciation and growth and creating this idea of generational wealth. And I got into this conversation with my dad when I was in college, and it had something to do with China and maybe them coming into the trade organization back in the early 2000s. And America and China never really had a great relationship, not even back then. And we were talking about what it would take in order for the world to get along with one another, or what it would take for America and China to kind of come together as and have some sort of common ground. And through that discussion, the idea of a common currency came up in my mind as something that I felt like it could be something that people could grasp behind and understand and use interchangeably between one another and really understand the value of each other's work in this global economy that's growing up here. And that conversation ended. We kind of decided that was probably not on the near horizon, and life moved on. And then in 2013, I was listening to CNBC in my car, and they were talking about Bitcoin and how it had gone to $350, and it's the highest that it had ever been, and how it started out with two pizzas, and how it was being used by criminals, and Silk Road was in the news, and Mount Gox was there. I was thinking about it, and they were talking about how it was used in money laundering and scams, and it'll never be a real currency. And it was such a new idea that I didn't really kind of pay much attention to it. I just thought, oh, that's something interesting. And then, you know, fast forward to 2017, I'm taking a hike with a buddy of mine when my wife was pregnant with our first son. And she was up front talking with his wife, and I was in the back talking with my buddy Alex. And he starts telling me about this thing called Bitcoin. And I probably spent the first 15 minutes of that conversation explaining to him why it was a bad idea and how it would never become anything and how it was a bubble and how it was just gambling and speculative and everything else you hear, even up to today. But at the end of the conversation, he got me thinking about a couple things. So I went back to the computer and did a couple Google searches and found the Bitcoin white paper, and I read it. And I thought to myself, oh my God, this is that currency that I was talking about with my dad 15, 16 years ago. And here it finally is. And this is exactly the solution is trying to solve with the whole SWIFT banking system and third-party verifications and all that other kind of stuff. And I just thought, you know what, this is something I need to look more into. And that kind of was my first step down the rabbit hole. And then from there, it turned into central banking. So then I was reading, you know, books like The Creature from Jekyll Island and Collusion and Lords of Finance and, you know, all these other big books. I read Atlas Shrugged, and it just seemed like all of these things were coming together. And at the end of all those books, they always have some sort of, you know, futuristic foretelling of what's going to happen. And they were all written 20 years ago or further back. And we seem to be right smack dab right in the middle of all of that prophecy telling that they were talking about in those books. And it just struck me. And I kept talking to Frida about it. And she goes, Chris, you keep talking about money. You're driving me and the kids crazy with it. You need to write a kid's book about this so we can start talking to our children about it. And I just looked at her and I said, well, that's not going to happen. And she goes, well, what do you mean that's not going to happen? I'm like, well, the whole idea of Bitcoin and all these books that are out there about it, and you have all these scholars who still don't understand it. I mean, how am I going to write a book that's focused around children for that? But I kept thinking about it. And after about a year this idea popped into my head about the book. And I was just sitting down in front of the TV with my laptop in front of me, just kind of letting my mind wander. And the idea of, you know, Bitcoin is something, yes, something quite rare. You won't find it in your pocket or under your chair. And I was just like, man, this thing, this energy thing, this new creation of store of value that can be used. And it's got this immutable blockchain, and it's got a finite amount. It has all of these principles that I had been learning about over the last several years and over a lifetime. And it just started organically coming out of me. I don't think we wouldn't have had so many hardships in our past, or if I wouldn't have been so deep down the rabbit hole in central banking that the book could have come out. But through that, it was almost like the spirit of Satoshi was speaking through me, because the book just kind of all came out in one session. It wasn't something that I had to come back to. It was just before I knew it, it was just all out there on paper. And I read it to Frida, and she was like, wow, this is amazing. And then I read it to a couple of other people, and they were like, wow, this is really good. You need to do something with this. And I'm like, okay, well, what do I do with this? And Frida was like, well, I'll draw the pictures for it. You know, you just break it out and I'll draw the pictures for it. So I broke it out in its different segments, and I handed it to her, and I said, okay, here, draw some pictures. And she reads it, and she goes, I have no idea what to draw here. I don't know. So we probably spent the next 6 weeks after we put the kids to bed every single night from about 8 o'clock until midnight, sitting around the dinner table with a bunch of pieces of paper out in front of us and just sketching out ideas and hashing out some thoughts and drawing out some things. And it was a great kind of a bonding experience for us. And at the end of the day, we had a great story that we could share with our kids and with families of the world.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I can tell you that my perspective is a little bit more straightforward. I just really like gone down the rabbit hole maybe a year and a half before we created the book, where Chris was down this path for a lot longer. And I kind of jumbled in like Bitcoin with any other cryptocurrency that's out there. And I did not understand the difference until a year and a half prior. And then once I found out what it actually was and what it meant, first, I was like, we need to put my money into this. You know, then the whole thing came about where, you know, I was thinking, you know, our kids are right now, like our son is almost 4. Our daughter is just a little bit over 1 year old. And I was thinking, this is really for the future generation, right? We will see some of this, but our kids are the ones that have to carry that through. And I grew up in a household where I was not educated on money. We always had money. We didn't have anything missing. But I did not understand how it worked, how it was created, you know, nothing about the background of it. And so when I started learning about that myself, you know, and like my age, I was like, my kids need to learn this early. So my mission, you know, for I would say a couple of months before, you know, I sat down with Chris was really, you know, to create something educational for our kids that's fun, because, you know, we try to teach them in conversation, but our kids love reading books at night. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, why not that? So I, you know, we kind of talked about this book idea for a long time. And then I just remember like the night, you know, he actually wrote the story. I just came down. I was like, I'm done with this. Like, we need to do something creative. Like, I was just like bored with the regular everyday stuff. And I was just like, let's, you know, do something. And miraculously, you know, with Chris's background, he just came up with the words. And like he said, then, you know, within the next 2 months or so, we just like literally kids are in bed. You know, we're downstairs, like working until midnight, trying to figure out the book idea. And it was a blast. I mean, it was really cool. And also like the little nuances, how we have in there, like the secret, like, you know, if you're an insider, you understand what some of the things mean. If you are new to Bitcoin, you might not understand all the little, you know, drawings and references that we have in there.
Yeah. A lot to unpack there. Two questions really come to mind. Frida, do you remember, maybe if we go back to, you know, before you got orange pilled, I guess, and, you know, Chris is going down the rabbit hole and he's learning about money and, you know, and you know, Chris mentioned that, you know, you guys couldn't write the book if you didn't go through the experience you did. So what was your sort of perspective then? It's like, I guess you're encouraging him to study and to learn and to eventually write the book. But do you remember like, Chris, we might need to make money. why are we spending all this time learning about money? Or what was kind of your take on that journey at that point for the family?
No, I think I've always had the background where I really appreciated, like, I mean, Chris grew up in a very different sort of setting in his family. Like, his dad did a really good job of educating them about money, and money was a conversation at the dinner table and what was going on in the economy and things like that. Honestly, with my background, you know, it's always like, money is there. Yes, you work for the money. I had like this notion within me since I think I was a little kid that this is somehow a fake thing. And that, you know, I don't understand why people do things for money that they wouldn't normally do. And I think that's still like a value that I hold today. This is probably why when I actually saw Bitcoin, I was like, oh, this is mine, right? Because I feel like, you know, a lot of people I will even talk to Bitcoin about, but their values are not aligned with Bitcoin. And so you won't get sucked in unless your values are aligned. That's how I see it. And it really, you know, I always appreciated Chris, you know, trying to teach me, and he's honestly been trying to teach me for years. You know, we met when we were 16 years old, which is a long time ago now. And we, you know, always had discussions around it. And I was just never into the details too much because it just was nothing that clicked to me. It wasn't something that, you know, brought my energy to me, or, you know, I very much work with people and I'm a physical person, let's say it that way. And this whole idea thing about, you know, where it comes from, what it is, like, was never really interesting to me. When I finally understood, you know, when we went off the gold standard and how that changed money and how maybe this is why I'm so reluctant to, you know, understand what it is, and then understanding that, you know, what central banks are all about and that they're privately held. Like, I mean, this just happened, you know, less than 10 years ago when I found out about this, you know. And you would think that, you know, me as like a working person in society making a you know, good income, that I would know more about it. So when I finally understood Bitcoin, when I read the white paper, when I understood what that meant for society, for our future, for our kids, that it's essentially, you know, the value passing down, you know, that's why I was like, wow, like, everybody should know about this. And more people need to wake up to understanding money. Now, money has been an emotional thing for me. And I think it is for many people. And I'm almost thinking, starting to believe now, that in our society, money is, you know, perceived as something that should be taken emotional, almost. Like, society is not making it easy to talk about money. It's kind of like this pressure point that people don't want to talk about. It's kind of swept under the rug. And so I really appreciate even like Bitcoin Twitter, you know, how people are just openly asking questions and then there's answers, and you can ask the dumbest questions you want and you will always get a genuine answer. You know, there's very few people on there that are just like pointing fingers, trying to know better, right? So,
yeah. Do you think talking about money is sort of taboo in our society? I mean, it's one thing maybe to talk about money, you know, on Twitter, and you don't know each other and that kind of thing. Is it hard for us to talk about money at the dinner table, maybe with like extended family or across generations?
I think depends on, you know, I guess who you grew up with. I think that a lot of people, I hope that a lot of people that have great wealth, you know, would teach their kids. Like, I have relatives in my family that are definitely, you know, their kids learn from an early age what the value of money is. I do think that some people are very narrow-minded as to money potentially shifting in form, right? So like, moving on to Bitcoin, you can have, you know, the person that understands everything about our current system, but they just don't have the foresight of understanding or even looking in the past, you know, understanding the history around it, to understand that it must die and there's something else that might be, you know, coming forward. So do I think it's taboo? I think, yes, in general society, I mean, people don't like to talk about how much money is actually in their bank account. When I came to the United States, I was very much shocked how many people, you know, you need to have a credit card to establish credit, right?
Right.
You know, in Germany, that's the way it is today too. But when I grew up, you know, I had my savings account and that's, you know, what I had. That's traditionally, you know, you spend what you have. And so, like, especially I think, like, you know, college kid nowadays, you know, is gets the credit card, is spending all this money. No, I don't think they actually truly understand the value also of things, right? Everything is immediate nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go get your Amazon order. It'll arrive tomorrow. And I'm guilty of that as well, right? It's just really like, I mean, it's been really recently that I have to be more mindful and looking at what's true value to me, to my family. You know, do my kids need 500 gifts for Christmas? Because, you know, they probably don't. There's other values that we're trying to give, such as, like, you know, quality time. Like, what does it mean to spend quality time, you know, for the parent to be off the phone for 4 hours and spending that time at the kid with the play at the playground, you know,
right.
That's quality time. And like, you don't see that a lot. Right. And so that's another form of value. This is where I appreciate the value talks around, you know, like Bitcoin gives value, but like, you know, proof of work in a way, you know?
Yeah. It's so interesting. Chris, you know, talking about cross generations, you know, you grew up thinking a lot about money and learned a lot of hard work and entrepreneurial pursuits from your parents. Have you talked to your dad about Bitcoin?
Oh my gosh, have I talked to my dad about Bitcoin? Oh yes. It's come to the point where he almost doesn't want to talk to me anymore because somehow the conversation always revolves back to Bitcoin and what his Charles Schwab advisor is advising him to do in this economy. And then kind of what my perspective on this, this point in history is. And you know, and to go back to money, kind of what you guys were talking about, you know, people forget, or, you know, there's that old saying out there, those that don't learn history are doomed to repeat it. And they don't a lot of people don't know, that money has changed many times and has been in many forms, even here in the United States since the founding of the country. You know, there was a time when towns were starting to, pop up across the Wild West as the country was expanding. And typically the wealthiest person in that town would start a bank and he would bring his gold there and other people would put their gold there because gold is hard to store in your own home. I mean, you literally need to have guns and people protecting it. Otherwise, the chances of getting it stolen were very high. And so they would put them in banks and rather than the bank always be handing you out nuggets of gold for whatever you needed to buy, they would create little ledgers, you know, notebooks, checkbooks for you to draw against at the bank or in the local town, to you know, in commerce. And then those banks would then be using intertown transfers of money through, of course, you know, the whole Wells Fargo logo of the wagon, you know, coming across the country, holding all the wealth of the town, you know, with it, but they would each have their own type of dollars, if you will. Mm-hmm. And depending on the credit worthiness of the bank in the town that is trying to do the exchange with the other town, a town could tell you, no, I don't trust your money. I don't accept your money here. You know, it's either gold, silver, or nothing. And so, you know, there was a time when there were lots of different paper dollars floating around the United States. And then it wasn't until the 1800s, when the boom bust cycles and the government started to get more powerful, that the consolidation of those dollar bills started happening down to fewer and fewer and fewer, until ultimately, through some bad governance, I would say, the central bank was able to be created to create one currency. And then from there, you know, it was a silver-backed currency and it was a gold-backed currency, and they had little red circles on them for silver and little, you know, blue ones on there for gold, or vice versa, until ultimately 1971, when Nixon closed the gold window, and then it all became fiat currency. Most people don't know that that history happened in America, and America is very comfortable and very used to having the currency change. I mean, there used to be $500 bills. There aren't. You know, you can still find $2 bills in circulation, but they're very rare. And some cashiers, if you try to use them, won't even accept them because it's so foreign to them that they don't even know that it existed. Right. So, you know, those end up in people's private storage as just kind of, you know, moments in time of history of a time that once was.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious, how has Bitcoin changed you, Chris, in terms of, I mean, you know, you thought a lot about what money could do for the world and if we could have a common currency, but you know, how's it, you know, finding this maybe changed your perspective or things, or even just, you know, your habits or something?
You know, there was a book that I read, and I can't remember which one it was, but they were talking about the idea of, and, you know, Saifedean talks a lot about this, about money being debt, and how in the idea in this book that I read, it's basically said, you know, money is money is debt. In order for currency to come into existence, a debt has to be issued. And so if the United States were to pay back all of its debt, there would literally be no currency in circulation. And that just always really struck me. And then, you know, Bitcoin is kind of like it is an asset. It's a digital asset. It lives on the internet. You know, we're the first generation to really live without the internet and then live with the internet. Mm-hmm. And depending on where your family's position was in that, maybe you were one of the first ones you knew to have AOL, or, you know, maybe you were one of the last ones to have like Netscape or AOL or any of the other dial-up services. And so, you know, we all have that idea in our head of the sound of what the internet connection used to be when we dialed into it, and how sketchy it used to be, and how it started from this very rudimentary idea and very few places to go, just news boards and message boards and internet chat rooms, to what we have today, which is basically running the world's economy. And so, you know, Bitcoin coming out over just the last 12 years, where it started and where it is just like a super accelerator on that pedal of the future happening. And what's so fascinating about Bitcoin is as the adoption curve of it continues to grow. And, you know, Anthony Pompliano, on one of his recent shows, he was just looking at how many new wallets there were with less than 0.01 Bitcoin in it, and how it's in the millions now, and how the people with over 1,000 Bitcoins are starting to reduce. And so the decentralization of the network and how it's maturing and how it's giving more people opportunity, and how that opportunity that it's given to them, it's like freezing your energy, your proof of work, in a moment of time that you can use into the future without any loss of production capacity. You know, so the more of it that you get, the more of this, you know, time preference is a big part of the conversation right now that we're all talking about. And for the first time in a long time, we finally have an opportunity to get again to store our current needs for something better into the future. Whereas if you just listen to the news or CNBC or the Wall Street Journal or Newsweek or the Financial Times, really all that they're talking about is how inflation is picking up, prices are going up. There's this incentive to drive people to spend now, to increase the velocity, you know. And then you got Jay Powell out there talking about how they're going to start the taper, but they're not really going to increase interest rates. All they're saying they're going to do is reduce the amount of liquidity they're pumping into the system every month now, which means, you know, I was thinking about that and how that could create a time when banks are now going to be forced to hold the debt that they're issuing on perhaps their own balance sheets versus selling it to the Federal Reserve. Mm. So they're going to have to underwrite these things differently. Well, in that period, if credit is going to become more difficult to obtain or more harder for corporations to keep, Bitcoin becomes a real valuable source there, because it becomes the pristine collateral that families and corporations and city states and nation states are going to need in order to secure their families or their people's livelihoods into the future. Yeah. And so I know it's kind of a big circle on how Bitcoin has changed me and my ideas and behaviors. But, you know, it's an accumulation game right now. At some point, it'll be, now you have the wealth, now let's use the wealth to better the family, better the society, better the world. But right now, as this thing grows, you know, one concept that I always found really interesting when I first got into Bitcoin was, Bitcoin is like owning a piece of the internet back in the 80s. You know, if you could have bought a piece of the internet back then, what would that be worth today? And that number, I mean, who knows what that number is? It's so big. I mean, even when people talk about, you know, I remember when $1 million was a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, now we're talking in the trillions of dollars, hundreds of trillions of dollars. And that number is impossible to quantify. Yeah. You know, if you could ask your Google or your Alexa, you know, how long would it take to count to a trillion? And it's something like 43 years if you did nothing but count to a trillion. Right, it's right. Such a big number.
Yeah, it is mind-boggling. And it's hard to do any sort of math when the denominator is growing right alongside the numerator. So you can't even, what do these dollars mean and how do you count them and how do you value them? What is the metric? I'd love to kind of keep on with the Bitcoin changes you and Frida, you know, you mentioned before the money was very emotional. Has Bitcoin changed you? And is money more or less emotional now?
I would definitely say it's less emotional. I think the more you know about it, right? I mean, like, you know, talk about emotions, I could go on for that, you know, like I'm down the path of very, very many holistic things. So, but yes, I think, you know, to get rid of emotions, you know, negative emotions and other work involved, just that knowledge, right? But there's still some triggers that I have here and there, but it definitely has changed. With Bitcoin, I think I have a new installed sort of almost like a trust in not only this currency, but what this currency translates into. And that's really community. It's always been, right, that we use currencies or assets to essentially do a trade amongst people. So really for me, it's always coming down to the individual, to the person, to the community. Like, how do you better your community, right? And I think with fiat, it's, you know, this unevenness. And I do truly believe that with the Bitcoin system, you know, it being capped at 21 million and all that, that there is some, I wouldn't call it equality, but there's some humanity back into what the system is that we're trading with, right? It just happens to be Bitcoin. And, you know, for me, I can tell you that there's definitely a change in behavior as far as also thinking about, for example, for me, it's very strongly at the forefront right now. It's merchandise and like how many things do we really need, right? You know, even came down to when we created the Bitcoin for Kiddos book, we were thinking, oh, you know, when we get it out, like, why don't we do like a t-shirt with it? Why don't we do, you know, a button that people can wear just to advertise, you know, like our brand and get the word out. And that was kind of a nice idea, but we really thought about it more. We didn't want to just do this fiat game around it, right? We wanted to just have something that actually is tangible for people to learn from and to spread the knowledge and it be word to mouth. Like we didn't feel like we needed, you know, stickers on walls so that people could find us. We felt like if it was a strong enough book and a strong enough message that it would naturally grow. And so I think that's one of the things that I just think twice nowadays when I buy toys or, you know, anything that's going on for the kids, you know, how much do we really need to keep up with the Joneses? Right. And it's good. It's really freeing. I mean, if you really sit down and you kind of think about what's the true needs, right? And I mean, get into meditation and all of that. It is something that is very freeing to say, you know, we only really need very little. And even, you know, if all this wealth comes around with Bitcoin, what is wealth if you don't know what to do with it? And so really for me, it's translated now into this mission of educating the future generation on what is money, how do we live with it today, how is it possibly transferring into the future into Bitcoin, and also giving kids the confidence around it. You know, for example, our son Benjamin, who's about to turn 4, there's a little event that's going on around the holidays where the kids are, you know, if they want to, they can make little things that they can sell at a market, like a little holiday market. And I've talked to him about it several times and he's just like, I don't want to do it. You know, I don't, you know, cause I explained to him, this is how you can make money. We can actually, you can put in the work, you create whatever you want to create that you want to sell to the other kids. You could get some money and then you can buy their things. I want to show him physically how this works because I feel he's in this world right now where it's like, he has to beg mommy and daddy to get something. And then we either say yes or no. So he's really at our disposal. Where I feel he's at the age where he could perfectly well decide, I want to, you know, put in the work to do something. And I have the capability and the understanding that actually somebody finds value in my work and they're willing to give me something for that, if it's a trade or money, whatever it is, right? And to instill that confidence, I know that that was not instilled at me at a young age. I think well until my early 30s, it was this thing of like, oh, the money comes when you do the work, but did not understand that it really is, a proper trade amongst people, and that you also can trade it only for the things that you truly value. Yeah. That it doesn't have to be, you just don't have to get the next thing because this person has it.
Yeah. One of the things we really wanted to create with the book, there's a lot of personal story in there with kind of the beginning of it, starting at the great financial crisis in 2008 and 2009. And Frieda and I were kind of in the epicenter of that, where we had owned some investment properties and I had lost my job and then I didn't have a revenue to be able to afford to pay the mortgages on those things and the renters moved out and we ended up losing that. And, we went through the whole foreclosure process and into bankruptcy. And so we learned firsthand kind of the fiat system and who it helps and who it doesn't help. At the time I was trying to work with the credit card companies and see if I could pay off my debt there at a lower monthly amount, or what I could do on the interest rate or any of that kind of stuff. And the banks told me flat out, multiple banks told me flat out, if you want us to help you, you first have to start missing payments. Otherwise, they won't help you at all. Mm. And so at that point, I was like, so wait a minute here. I'm trying to be a good steward here. I'm coming to you saying I'm having issues. I want to pay you. Can we put together a plan to make that happen? And they said, no, you can't. Not until you stop paying your bills. And then I was like, okay, so what happens then? And then they say, oh, well, then, we can move you into this other program. And whatever your debt is, we can cut it down to half and then you can pay that. And I'm just like, so you're just going to take a 50% haircut right off the top and it doesn't mean anything to you? And they're like, yeah, but we don't want to say it that way, but yeah, that's pretty much how it is. And then, so to go through the bankruptcy process and the investment property that we had went into short sale. And then all of a sudden I got this check after the house was sold from Chase Bank for $10,000. And I was like, what is this check? And apparently there was some program during some stimulus package at the time where if your home was in a short sale and it sold, you would get a tax-free check of $10,000. I'm like, how does this system make any sense? So, we took that money and I didn't touch it for years. It became part of the down payment that we have on the house that we own today. But it just, that was kind of the trigger point that made me realize this system is really bad and it's really only helping those closest to the money printer, the whole cotillion effect. And there has to be another way. And then again, the other way is Bitcoin. And I just don't see it any other way. And then, so with the book, kind of what Frieda's talking about is we want to give the experience and the knowledge that we have to our children to help them get comfortable with those concepts and the idea of money so that they'll be comfortable talking about it with their children. There's an old adage that I heard that was the father starts the business, the son grows the business, and the child destroys the business. Because what happens is the father's growing the business, he teaches his son how to operate the business, how to grow the business. The son is an integral part, always at the business, because the father's always there, right? Or father, mother, whatever. And then as they grow up and they have kids, now they're so consumed with the business, they don't have time for their children to teach them the same values that their parents taught them. And so when that business becomes inherited by the younger generation, all they saw is the benefit of it. They didn't see any of the hard work that went into sustaining the business, to keeping the relationships, to making sure you had inventory, to making sure you paid your bills on time. And what they end up doing is buying fast cars and RVs and motorcycles and vacations until at some point the money dries up and they have to sell the business, right? just to break even. And so I've seen it time and time again, and we just don't want our kids to be in that situation. And what we've noticed through even the 4 months that Bitcoin for Kiddos has been available, the amount of sales that we've gotten has just been way beyond our wildest dreams. Mm-hmm. And it's so great to see that there are families out there that are thinking the same things that we're thinking and trying to inspire in our children. And, it's really, it's not something that comes up in conversation a lot, or it's only within small circles, but the sales of the book. We sold it in almost 20 different countries. And so you start to see that there is this bond amongst Bitcoiners that we don't communicate directly with, but is definitely a really strong value point that we have that we want the next generation to have instilled in them.
Yeah. It's really interesting with fatherhood. You know, I feel like for me, when I found Bitcoin 4 years ago, mentally, just at the beginning, was able to help me get out of like the Red Queen's race of just struggling to keep up with family finances. And, you know, conceptually, it made so much sense to me in that regard, but price was going down in dollar terms. And there was some, you know, struggle there with before my wife became a Bitcoiner and trying to explain, well, I want to save our whatever we can in this thing that's going down in value in the way that we measure it now. But you have to understand that it's designed to go up forever and we're going to get through this and it's going to take 4 years, you know. And at first too, like, so now I'm mentally out of the Red Queen's race and I have a way to save, but in some ways it might've made me a worse father because now I'm down the rabbit hole and I'm putting all my time into this. And that's important because I want to build conviction and gain conviction for my family, you know, and save time for the future to spend more time with them. So I wonder, Chris, has it changed you as a father? I know you've been looking for, I don't know, good money or better money or a way to, you know, how the rich always sent the money out and it came back as more. And now you've found this tool. Has it changed you as a father?
I don't think it's changed me as a father. I think if anything, you know, I look at Bitcoin as it's a way to save for the future. So we don't use leverage. It's not one of those things. I don't think of it as an investment, you know. I think at it as it is part of the family wealth that they will one day have and have responsibility for. And we're lucky enough that we still have day jobs, hopefully for not too much longer, but nonetheless, we still have day jobs. And we're able to work from home. So we're able to spend a lot of time with our kids right now. And even, you know, when I pick up Benjamin from school, it's always, Daddy, can we listen to music? And I'm always listening to some YouTube video or one of your podcasts or one of the, you know, other Bitcoin podcasts. And you never really know how much of it is rubbing off on your kids. Mm-hmm. But then the other day he wants to grab a quarter out of the quarter jar. And I taught him how to spin it on the floor, but he doesn't go, Daddy, can I have some money to spin? He goes, Daddy, can I get some currency to spin? So he's already learning the differences between money and currency, which is also a concept in the book. And, you know, those types of things are literally priceless. And, you know, we hope we can teach our daughter that when she gets to the right age too, to have to instill those same concepts. But, you know, I think as a father figure, our job is to create a role model for our children to look up to. And, I think as we do the things that are making us happy, it makes them happy. And they want to become more involved in that and kind of, you know, copy the parents and what they're doing. So, you know, if you're growing a business, it's never easy. And there's always time that's taken away from the family. And again, coming from two parents who grew and built multiple businesses, I definitely saw that. But as I look back as an adult now, I don't think that I wished I had more time with them. I think that they gave me the time that they could give. And I think as long as a parent can give the time that they're able to give, no matter how much time that is, and the kid knows that that's the time available, and they're actually giving that time to the child, that's all the child really cares about in the future.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I'd love to dive into the book. Some of the topics you guys cover here are very tastefully done, but they cover some really deep stuff and some heady stuff, you know, and really lots for discussion here. I mean, one of the lines, governments lied and said Bitcoin had no worth. They banned it and unbanned it since almost its birth. It's a great rhyme scheme, but it also kind of talks about governments and how they lie. And that's very interesting. One of the, we talked about money and currency. So I'd love to get into this one. So money is money and currency is different. Money is value and creates great wealth, while currency is paper that robs your financial health. And then there's a blurb. Why do all the boring things go up in price and the fun stuff goes down in value over the time? Down in value over time. Chris, I'd love for you to explain that one a little bit. It's just kind of stuck with me since I've read the book, and I'm just wrapping my head around it. I agree, but I'd love for you to get into it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I really love that page in the book, and I would love to frame it and put it on my wall because I think it just so eloquently captures so many different concepts. And the idea behind the book was to give good visualization and stories that kids could really grasp onto and enjoy reading, but at the same time, give food for thought for the parents to start their own journeys right down the rabbit hole. And then the communication between child and parent could really begin on philosophies and ideas behind money. So with, money is value that creates great wealth, and alongside that, why do all the boring things in life go up in price? Well, the boring things in life typically happen to be things that you put your money into that aren't really exciting on a day-to-day level, like your house, like, in the past, gold and silver or Bitcoin or a building or, real estate property or, empty land. It just kind of sits there. And on a day-to-day level, it doesn't really do anything for you. Whereas if you were to take that money and you were to buy a motorboat or a jet ski or a motorcycle, those things are all considered by society to be assets, but they're depreciating assets, right? So your car depreciates in value over time. If you buy it today, once you drive it off the lot, if it's brand new, it's already lost 15 to 20% of its value right off the top there. And so over time, those things ultimately become worthless. Whereas assets, true assets become true assets in the sense of there's a scarcity component to it. Those things grow in value over time or grow in price over time so that you can then either sell for a profit or borrow against to buy other things that you want to have. As I was going along this journey, Robert Kiyosaki and Rich Dad Poor Dad, when I was in my early 20s, was a really big inspirational person in my life, in his books and his concepts of what he was learning from his rich dad compared to what his quote unquote, poor dad were teaching him, really, really drove home these exact principles that are right here. It's about time preference. It's about putting in your work in, putting your money into something that's going to be worth more in the future that then you can experience prosperity from versus taking the quick sort of drug fix of excitement of something fun that's maybe keeping up with the Joneses, that maybe your friends are really happy that you have, and you have those experiences, but at the end of the day leaves your life less fulfilled and able to take advantage of less prosperity in the future.
Yeah. I'm really curious, Chris, what might have been some, it sounds like you read the white paper pretty early on and grasped that right away. I mean, what were some of the other things about Bitcoin that you might've read or come across or heard that were really impactful for you during your rabbit hole journey?
Well, it's one of those things where it's commonly said, I came for the number go up technology and stayed for the revolution. So, in that respect, my story is probably similar to 95% of every Bitcoiner out there when they first go down the rabbit hole. Frida being from Germany and me being in the United States, and again, we met when we were 16, so that was a long time ago. And I got the opportunity to go to Europe when I was before I was 20, and I lived there for a year, and that was when they were still under the Deutschmark. And so I remember being able to go to Germany and basically whatever I bought there was 50% off compared to what it would cost me at home because of the exchange rate difference. And then when the Deutschmark, merged into the euro and it became the euro, then all of a sudden everything was 30% more expensive. And so I really felt and lived that lifestyle difference. It was again one of those experiences that you can read about in a book, but unless you actually experience, it's really hard to understand how that affects your decision making processes on what to buy and when to buy it.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. And Frida, what about yourself? Like, I'm really curious. Did you ever challenge Chris to put more in? It sounded like you said that at the beginning of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm kind of curious what that kind of moment was like, you know, and what kind of helped you gain conviction.
First of all, I was never more attracted to her than at that moment in time.
So I think, you know, when Bitcoin went throughout the little big dip, you know, I went down to like $3,000. You know, I'm very like old school where like we have dinner at the dinner table. There's no devices at the dinner table. And this was like the one night.
This was the March 2020 crash. Mm.
And Chris was on his phone and I was just like cursing him out. I was just like, honey, this family goes first before anything the internet does. And he's like, you don't understand. And then, you know, I was so furious at that situation that really, you know, I just questioned him more around like, why was this so important? Why is this, you know, like it came out of anger, to be honest with you. And probably like 2 months or so, or maybe like a couple months after that, we went to a friend's house, which is like an hour and a half drive. And he popped in the Orange Pill podcast and just had me listen to an episode. And I was sold. I was sold after an hour and a half of listening to Max and Stacey. In particular, you know, them always having people on that Bitcoin actually transformed their lives, right? In particular, there was, I guess, a situation where, you know, this was a country where women are not allowed to drive, not allowed to work. And this woman was in an abusive relationship and she actually was able to be a blogger online in her free time away from her husband, earn Bitcoin and get out of this relationship that was abusive. And that was so powerful for me as, you know, just a human aspect. Like I said, I'm always about the human aspect in this, where I was just like, wow, this is amazing. And then I understood more, like I read the white paper, I understood, you know, there's a cap on it. I understood that it makes sense, that it's actually the money of the people. And from there, yes, I turned around and I said, honey, what have you been doing? You've been sitting on this for a couple of years. Why have you not invested our 401ks and all of this? So I was pretty drastic at that point. I think in a matter of weeks, you know, when I get something into my head, I am really a doer. That's why sometimes I think Chris holds back with ideas, because once I accept that idea, I will do it. So I took out a big chunk out of my savings and I said, I'm putting this. And I think we had a talks for about three or four weeks after that. And Chris was like, fine, I'm going to do the same with some of my savings that I was afraid to put in prior. And it's kind of interesting, you know, how he had the concept in his head, but he needed me to like bring the trust into the picture, I guess. You know, he wasn't going to do it on his own because he didn't want the finger pointing afterwards. So we both had to be on board to understand this is the risk we're taking, which I don't see as much of a risk, to be honest with you. You know, but that's how I came into it. And I still think today, I'm just like, man, there's more we should put. And Chris is the conservative one of the two of us. I think, you know, if it was me, I might have YOLO'd it earlier on.
My biggest issue is once I buy it, I don't ever want to sell it. So I don't want to come to a situation where I'm forced to sell, and maybe it's not at the right time to be able to sell. You know, maybe the market's coming down and I don't want to have to sell at that time. I want to be able to accumulate more. And, you know, one of the other things that we've talked about, and I know it was one of Frida's aha moments, was the idea of the mass amount of people around the world that are unbanked. Mm-hmm. For one of our wedding anniversaries, we went to Jamaica. And I was talking with one of the people that worked at the resort that we were at. And I was mentioning how on all the buildings that I saw there, on all the homes, there's always this rusty rebarb that comes out of the rooftops of all of these places. And he said, oh, yeah, that's because, you know, in America, you can finance a house and you just borrow money and buy it. Here in Jamaica, we can't do that. So we literally make our homes cinder block by cinder block, paycheck by paycheck. And we always leave the rebar exposed on the roof because the expectation is at some point we're going to be able to put on a second story. And that was just kind of one of those, again, aha moments. Here in America, we get so caught up in our bubble thinking the whole world lives the way we live, not realizing that we are such a small percentage of the world population. And our lifestyle is so exorbitantly nice compared to what most people have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And Bitcoin gives them that even playing field opportunity to have the dreams, to be able to dream again, to have that American dream in their own countries and to have prosperity for their families where before there was none.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, I've gone to travel myself. I've even gone to some remote villages in Fiji. And, you know, they spend a lifetime saving up to build a hut that costs maybe $1,500 or $2,000 in dollars. And it's sort of a community event, or, you know, they throw parties to help raise money. And then the community gets together to help build the actual home. A lot of people live in a very different situation. The book, what really struck me also was the artwork, the illustrations. It makes it feel like this is a book that I've seen before, and it just feels like it's been around forever. It just kind of feels homey. And one of the rhyme schemes, once the secret was out and the next crisis struck, the people were happy they no longer had to pass the buck. That one has kind of struck me on deeper levels as I revisit it. And I really think about not just the concept of passing the buck or passing the problem, but really literally passing the buck. And the people don't want to use the dollar anymore. It's kind of hit me on a double meaning there. So what was some of the inspiration for the artwork? It is wonderful. It is very relatable. And, you know, like I said before, it makes it feel like I've seen the book before. It's just another wonderful children's book. It just kind of fits right in. Where'd the inspiration come from?
Well, thank you. I have an arts degree background, actually. This was really a plan to make it relatable to even the youngest ones, right? So there's the reason that this is not like profound and, you know, just very kids oriented. But I also wanted to make it approachable enough for even an adult to be able to read it to their kids. You know, this is what we say, actually. If you give this to your friend's kids, you know, the adults will be forced to read it. And we've actually heard a couple of stories now where, you know, friends were orange pilled through the kids book that is supposed to be just for the kids. You know, it's approachable. And I think that's always important in learning. I think, you know, the trust of being able to ask questions, even in your own home, and that a question is never dumb enough to be answered and not to be ridiculed for it. I think that is something that we are really doing in our house and that we were able to, you know, allow our kids to have. With the artwork itself, I have to say that I went down the deep end. When we started this, I was going down a completely different route. I was like, we have to bring the Genesis block into this. It has to be biblical. And Chris looked at a couple of first pictures that I drew and he's like, no, this is not gonna happen. And then we were honestly just doodling, both of us. Chris has great concept in his head, but he's not able to illustrate him as best as I could. But like, he started just doodling, and a lot of those doodles were actually translated into the real pictures, one-to-one, just, you know, in the look. I want to say I'm proud that I came up with the Bitcoin bunny, but he definitely was the creation of the rat. So it was kind of a teamwork there, and it's actually been really fun just to, you know, be able to, this is one thing where skill comes in, and where it's kind of nice to actually go through the hours of just practicing something relentlessly as a kid, you know, even though I hadn't actually drawn in a long time, like, just comes back to me pretty easy as in order to create a concept, or, you know, even with the color schemes or whatever. And yes, like the homey feel is definitely a goal of mine, to like, you feel warm and fuzzy reading it, even though, you know, the only really bad negative review that we've gotten, and this was from somebody that's not yet orange pilled, one of my friends actually bought the book, and she said she's not certain that she wants to read it to her kids because it's a little bit anti-government. And so I was like, okay, you know, I get it. And that's for somebody that does not understand Bitcoin. So that's where the inspiration came from. Really. You know, it's a teamwork, even with, you know, the words came from Chris, but even sectioning it out properly and things like that was all teamwork as well.
Yeah. Well, it is fantastic. Another line I love is, it was created in a time when the world was in crisis. It grew to be something quite rare and something quite priceless. And I think about when I read that to my kids now, it's Bitcoin is still new to them. It's new as if it's brand new to everyone. It's only 10, 12, 13 years old. So it rings to me like the crisis is now, and Bitcoin is still born of this era. So it's just very current in that regard to the children. I don't think they think of it as the great financial crisis. They think about it as the crisis we're in now. So I thought that was really great. I love the glossary you guys include. One of the ways I've come across, Michael Karras wrote a kid's book for Bitcoin as well. It's a beautiful book. And this book as well, what I do when I give it to the parents, I recommend that they read it first. I know some parents, I don't want to feel like I'm trying to orange pill the kids behind their back. But for me, it really is trying to orange pill them. And if they're orange pilled, of course, they're going to orange pill their kids. But I want them to read it first, and I want them, to sink in. And it's under the guise of, read this first and then read it with your kids. But it's really about them reading it for me in a lot of ways.
Correct.
I love the book and I appreciate it so much. I'd love for, please let everyone know where they could find you guys and the book and the website and things of that nature.
Yeah, you can find our website at bitcoinforkiddos.com. And just right there on the homepage, if you scroll down, you can order it straight underneath the fold. And then we're also on Twitter under Bitcoin for Kid with a double D one. And you can just search Bitcoin for Kiddos as well. But the actual handle is Bitcoin for Kid with a double D and then the number one on Twitter. And we're very active on Twitter. You can also find us on Twitter, on Instagram. Thank you. At Bitcoin for Kiddos. Those are the three outlets.
Yeah, we're pretty good too. If you have any questions about the book, if you DM us, I usually get back to you pretty quickly on that. Some people, it's also kind of our customer service support center as well too. If you have any questions about shipping or what countries we ship to. One of the interesting things right now is we've actually had a lot of demand for the book in Australia. And it's really unfortunate that right now the United States Postal Service isn't able to ship to Australia. And so we've had to turn away quite a bit of business from families looking to get the book just because we can't ship it there. And that's as of September. So we check regularly and we're hoping that situation changes.
We can't ship at the low shipping rate that you would expect. So if you want it shipped to Australia, it's literally close to $100 with a special shipping service. We actually had one person buy it for that price to Australia. we can't ship it right now, I think, with everything that's going on in the world, particularly in Australia.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, first of all, that's crazy. But, this is information. And if people want to get their hands on it, it's priceless. And especially if you want to orange pill a generation of kids, $100 is not that much in the grand scheme of things, even though I know that's a lot of money. I love the book. I believe we're going to get the link up that for they can get 15% off. They use the code Matrix. And, I can't tell you guys how incredible this has been. I love the book a lot. And I hope we covered all the ground you guys were hoping to cover. This has been so dope.
Yeah. I mean, again, with the book, we're just really hoping, we don't make really any money on the book. It's more of an educational piece that we're hoping to help, people understand more about Bitcoin and kind of take away some of the fear that they might have about Bitcoin. And we just want, families to know that we hope that you get as much joy out of reading the book and talking about the concepts with your kids as your understanding of money and currency and Bitcoin and digital assets evolves over time, that this can be something that you can continuously go back to look for new sort of rabbit hole niches that are out there. So we try to cover a lot in this book, but we do it in a way that's really informative, more on a visual side of things. So the most of the story is in the pictures. Hopefully you enjoy it for years to come.
Yeah.
And just wanted to tap on, I think in general, when, people are hesitant, I think why Bitcoin kind of clicked for me was because a lot of our lifestyle already is decentralized. If we think about it, we go to a lot of local farmers market to get our food. We want to make sure we understand where our food comes from. We understand, what our school is doing down the road. We're very involved. So I think a lot of people don't understand that this Bitcoin is actually a decentralized system that might work very well for your current lifestyle already. So always like encourage people, and no matter who you are, you know, people like I've heard, you know, our neighbors, some of our neighbors are saying, oh, I'm too old for this. You know, I'm too old for this. They're in their early 60s. And I'm telling you, you're not never too old for it. You know, just don't get into that headspace where you think you have to know everything, or, you know, you think you're, you know, you no longer can learn. Like I've always, like, I mean, in life, we live to learn, right? So that's how I think about it.
I agree.
Yeah. So get the book, put it out at your next holiday party, throw it in your bathroom if you don't have any children.
Yes.
Let your guests read it. Just have it out there unassumingly. And you'd be amazed at the questions and conversations that come
100%.
Up.
We've gotten a lot of fun feedback from our friends that don't even have kids that do exactly that. Yeah.
Awesome. This has been so dope, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cedric. It was great talking with you.
Likewise. Chris and Frida Bobé on their rabbit hole story, battling through economic hardships and creating their wonderful new children's book, Bitcoin for Kiddos, right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. This episode was brought to you by Ledin, Bitcoin Magazine, and the Bitcoin 2022 conference. Ledin.io is a secure, simple, and easy-to-use platform for managing and growing your digital wealth. Ledin is the first digital asset lender with the transparency and security of a formal proof of reserves attestation, raising the bar in the space. To open your account and get $50 free in USDC when you take out your first Ledin loan, make sure to head over to start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. Remember, prices for the Bitcoin 2022 conference will continue to go up, so buy your tickets today and make sure to use the code Bitcoin Matrix for 10% off at checkout. Also, make sure to use the code Matrix for 15% off your order at bitcoinforkiddos.com. If you order today, you'll still have time for Christmas. And thank you for listening. Please subscribe, share, and write a 5-star review on Apple. And if you want to support the show more directly, I have tips enabled on Twitter at Sed Youngelman. All your support means a lot and really helps us grow the show and continue to pump out fresh and dope conversations about Bitcoin and the implications of money on society, culture, and economics. Stack sats, stay humble, and stay laser focused. This is Cedric. Peace.